Welcome to This Is Money in partnership with NSNI. I'm your host, Georgie Frost, and alongside me today is editor Simon Lambert. And the new tax year is underway, so we run through the potential winners and losers, from wage rises and marriage perks to stealth car taxes and buy-to-letters. But watch out, if you are in line for a gain, it may be wiped out by National Bill Hike Day. It's the time of the year when utility companies tend to put up their prices. But it's not just our energy or broadband. No, council tax, prescriptions, if you're in England, and even stamps have all gone up. So we'll run through how you can reduce your bills. Obviously, not all of them can be reduced, I'm afraid. Don't forget, you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving your little ones a head start with our junior ISA.
Now, the new tax year is underway, and shortly, if not already, you will start noticing some of the changes. Perhaps when you get your wage slip at work, your bills through the post, or your pensions or savings updates. From workers to married couples, drivers, renters, homeowners, no one, it seems, is immune. So let's run through some of the potential winners and losers for 2019 to 2020. But first, Simon, why do we get so many changes all at once at this time? Remind us.
Because it is the end of the old tax year and the start of the new tax year. The old tax year ends on April the 5th. The new tax year starts on April the 6th. I don't know. I should know by now, shouldn't I, after all these years of financial journalism, why it is April the 6th.
You knew where my brain was going there,
I mean,
Simon.
Why not the 1st? I mean, why April
why
is
not
a good question.
The first?
January the 1st, you could see, because you've got the whole Christmas thing running up to it. Now, obviously, one of the problems with the end of the tax year, which we have now managed to get past, is that there is a frantic rush of people sorting out their tax, but also companies, businesses have to do loads of stuff, process payments, get people paid, make sure that stuff's done in the right end of the tax year. There's some jiggery pokery that goes on, you know, get this through this tax year. No, don't wait. Don't do that this tax year. Wait for the next one. Imagine trying to do that with Christmas, which now appears to start on about the 6th of December and run through to the 6th of January in terms of people not being at work.
I was going to say, when they decided to have it in April, at the start of April, they probably didn't factor in the fact that Christmas is now forever.
They didn't, basically. In the old days, apparently people used to do some work in December. Now people have seemed to have decided. I was talking to someone Christmas, it feels like the other day. I was talking to someone at Christmas, and I'm going completely off piste here.
That's fine.
Now,
Simon.
Christmas Eve this year was on a Monday. So the Friday was, if we count back, the Friday was the 21st. One of their staff said to them, this is a small business as well, said, we'll be leaving at lunchtime on Friday. And they said, no, why? It's the last working day before Christmas, and will we have an early finish? And the business owner said, well, no, because the last working day is actually Monday, which is Christmas Eve. And the day that you would normally leave at half day is Christmas Eve. And I've given you all Monday off completely. None of you have to come into work and you're all getting paid for it. So
they expect
you're not leaving at lunchtime on the Friday. Maybe we might finish a bit earlier and we can all go for a drink. But no, everyone is not leaving at lunchtime. And they also said to me, and also, I know it's not even lunchtime. It's 12. They'll all leave at 12.
Yeah,
they won't leave at 1. They'll all leave at 12. This is why the tax year is not the 1st of January, right?
Okay, right.
So it's April the 6th. So
it is when it is.
Welcome,
and it is recently.
Welcome to the new tax
change.
Year. Welcome to the new tax year, listeners.
Welcome.
So anyway, we get all these changes. And there's actually quite a few of them coming in this year, including a bumper one for one of the income tax allowances.
Mm-hmm. Explain.
So the personal allowance is going up. It is rising by £650 to £12,500. The personal allowance is the amount of money that you can earn before paying any tax. It means that about 26 million people who pay basic rate tax at 20% will keep an extra £130 in their pockets over the year. Now, the big jump, however, is the rate at which you begin paying the higher rate of tax at 40%. Now, that is going up from £34,500 to £37,500. Alarm bell rings in people's heads. Hang on, I thought it was 40-something thousand. You have to add it to the personal allowance. So it means that you won't start paying 40% tax. Most people won't start paying 40% tax until their income hits £50,000. That is compared to £46,350 last year. That is a really big jump. And the reason behind that is that the Tories made a manifesto commitment to get it to £50,000. It's to reverse years of something called fiscal drag. And that is where governments sneakily drag more people into paying more tax by not raising the tax threshold in line with inflation or wage increases. That's happened. There are an awful lot more 40% taxpayers now than there were 10, 15, 20 years ago. They're redressing some of that balance.
However,
ha ha ha.
I know your pauses.
Ha ha ha. Now that should theoretically be worth £830 a year to someone who is a higher rate taxpayer, which is no small amount. However, some of it is being clawed back by National Insurance. National Insurance is charged at 12%, but the rate drops to 2% above a certain threshold, which is broadly in line with that higher rate tax bracket. So that is because if you pay basic rate tax, you pay 20% tax, right? You don't really, you pay 32 because you have to pay National Insurance as well. You've got the other 12 that goes on top of it. Now, if you pay higher rate tax, you pay 40% tax. But if you were paying that higher, that rate of National Insurance, you would be paying 52%. You'd be paying more than half of your wages in tax. So actually, National Insurance drops to 2% above that level. But because the threshold is going to rise along with the income tax threshold to £50,000, it means that you're going to be paying 12% National Insurance on the money between 46,000 and 350, which people wouldn't have otherwise previously been paying. So the net effect is a £25 saving in National Insurance for basic rate taxpayers, but higher earners will pay £340 extra, and that's going to eat into the £830.
Right. Okay.
And just to confirm for all of our readers north of the border, north of the border, this won't apply to them because Scotland has its own tax rates.
Right.
And I'm afraid they're going to have to look into that themselves, because they're way too complicated to run through all of them.
What about the benefits of getting married, apart from obviously spending a blissful lifetime with the one you love? It all comes down to money, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if spending a blissful lifetime with the one that you love and making a lifelong commitment to being happy and forsaking all others wasn't enough, you can also get an extra £12 tax break this year. There may be some of our listeners thinking, I'm not sure my spouse is worth £1 a month. The tax break isn't just £12.
But what's the point?
Wouldn't it be hilarious if there was? If basically you just got 12 quid a year. No, the amount you can save by using the marriage allowance will increase marginally from £238 to £250. It was introduced to help married couples and civil partners where one earns less than the other. Taxman lets the lower earner transfer 10% of any unused personal allowance to the higher earner. So that's £1,250 from now. To qualify, though, the higher earner's income must be between £12,500 and £50,000, or £43,430 if you're in Scotland. It's basically because people are disadvantaged through the tax system. If, for example, you have a couple, a family, where one person is earning and the other one is staying at home to look after the children, or one person is earning most of the money, being the main breadwinner, and the other person just does a little bit of part-time work, is that there are all kinds of things in the tax system that means that other people have a greater comparative advantage over you. For example, you might earn less than the personal allowance. It might be that you can't qualify for extra working tax credits and things like that because you're not getting things that you would get if you were earning more. Now, obviously, you're then further disadvantaged in terms of your financial life because other families have two earners.
Mm-hmm.
And so you find things like, for example, it's more expensive to buy a house because most people buy houses with two wages and things like that. So there's all kinds of ways where you're disadvantaged. And the idea is to try and swing it back a little bit in the favour of the people who were disadvantaged by that.
Single people are probably getting their little violins out right now, because you think about the single tax and how much people have to pay. If you are on your own and you do have to buy a house on your own and all of those things, and you don't get a benefit, I assume you don't.
Yeah, but the idea is that it's the idea is really is to support families. The idea
do you not
is
have because child if you're if you credits?
Well, you might get some of that, you might not. The idea is that actually we do an awful lot of stuff to support working parents, right? But we do very, very little to support families where one person stays at home to look after the children. This is a very interesting part of policy and the tax code and things like that. And this is a really teeny, 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 tiny sop to those people.
I can just picture the Twitter, though, tirade, if anybody was to dare mention about helping out people who choose to stay at home. I'm a big fan. If that is what you want to do, that is your choice. But I can imagine the response to that would be, if you choose to stay at home, you should be able to afford to do so. That is not what I'm saying. That is what I imagine I would
put the counterpoint to that. Not very long ago, i.e., when I was a kid, it was a much more realistic prospect for families to only have one parent who was working, or only one parent who was working full time. Nowadays, it is very, very difficult. And it's actually to the point where in certain sections of society, i.e., you know, the up and coming middle class and above, until you get to the really posh people, where it's kind of looked down on a bit,
and
it's primarily women, okay, because that's the way it falls mainly. But when, you know, friends of mine get asked, you know, a couple of them, it is abnormal, the ones that don't work, right, who've got kids, and when they get asked by people, oh, you know, what do you do, and they're like, well, I'm a mum. It's like, that must be nice for you, because they get massively patronised. I don't know. I kind of think it would be better to live in a world where actually parents did still have the option of not both of them working full time, because actually I do think it's better for the kids to have a parent around as much as possible. That I think it's a sorry state that we've got ourselves into, where basically we're shifting towards the outsource all the childcare. Kid gets dropped off at 8 at breakfast club and gets picked up at 6:30. And it's like, well, we've got to do that because that's what we have to do to keep this roof over our head. And I'm in the position where my kids go to breakfast club at 8 o'clock in the morning, getting picked up at 6:30 many days of the week. Yeah. And I do sometimes think, okay, yeah, we're both making the choice to work and to earn more money and everything because of it. But I do think it's a bit of a sorry thing in the world where over the course of 30 years, the situation has changed around so much. And the idea behind people who are big proponents of some of these allowances is to try and redress some of that balance. I'm not entirely sure it's working, though.
Saying that, though, I was the daughter about 30-odd years ago of a full-time working mother. So for me, it's always been in the back of my mind that women always work, men always work, both couples do. But I've got huge sympathy, and anyone that suggests having children is not in itself a difficult and full-time and
I just think it would be nice if more people had the choice. And I think it's something that people are being forced into out of necessity rather than choice, and they're being forced into it largely out of financial necessity, and actually forced into it largely out of one main element of financial necessity, which is something that you're going to love me for bringing up, which is really, really high house prices and the cost of putting a roof over your head.
All right, well, talking of house prices and the like, we're going to be talking about buy-to-letters shortly, but let's just cover off changes in inheritance tax first, pensions and savings.
Yes, indeed. So, basically, the lifetime allowance, which is the amount that can go into your pension, it's not the amount that you can pay in, it's the amount that you've paid in, that your company's paid in, the tax relief you've had and all the growth that you've had, will rise slightly from 1.03 million, so that's £1,030,000, to 1.055 million, £1,055,000. That's a £25,000 rise. That pales into insignificance compared to the fact that A, up until relatively recently, the lifetime allowance didn't even exist. And when it was brought in, it was £1.8 million, but it's been cut lots since then. The amount you can pay into your pension each year, the annual allowance, will remain the same at £40,000. We keep getting talk that these things are going to get cut, particularly the annual allowance. An awful lot has gone into stopping very, very high earners paying loads and loads of money into their pensions. That's what these two things are. It's now starting to cause serious problems of unintended consequences, such as loads of doctors deciding that they're not going to work anymore mm-hmm. because they've hit their sort of lifetime allowance, decided that it's not worth doing working anymore and having any more money paid into their NHS pensions, so they're just going to stop working.
Which is no good, is it?
If I was the Chancellor, I'd get rid of the lifetime allowance.
Okay, then. But sadly, Simon, you're not.
Yeah, no,
but if
I'm not.
He is listening, take note.
Good news, though, for those with a state pension, an extra £3.25 per week to £129.20. That's the old basic state pension. The new state pension will go up by £4.25 to a maximum of £168.60. Hang on a minute, I hear you say. Did you just tell me that the smaller basic state pension will rise by £3.25, but the larger flat rate state pension will go up by £4.25? Are the people with the larger pension not getting an extra £1 a week? Tis true. However, those on the basic state pension are more likely to have extra pension from the state second pension, etc. And that's the justification behind that. The minimum contribution under auto-enrolment, the amount that people have to pay into their pension when they've been auto-enrolled, unless they opt back out, is also rising from 5% to 8% of qualifying earnings, at least 3% from your employer and 5% from staff. Now, there's an interesting thing here where there's questions, are we going to reach the tipping point where people start opting themselves back out of this because they're now going to start feeling the pinch in their wage packet? I reckon maybe not. I think don't opt yourself out. If you haven't got a pension, keep paying the money in. One day you'll say thank you to yourself.
Read the behavioural economics books, though. Chances are that we're unlikely to opt out of anything, or we really just keep it going. You just absorb it eventually, don't you?
Well, I mean, there's a Netflix, Now TV and Amazon Prime subscription in the Lambert household that says that's true.
Well, as long as you enjoy it, Simon. All right, inheritance tax.
Inheritance tax. The allowance is frozen. £325,000 that you can leave inheritance tax free if you are an individual. £650,000 it can be doubled up to by using your spouse's unused allowance or your civil partner's unused allowance. Anything above that, taxed at 40%. If we're talking about disadvantaging single people, this is definitely somewhere where the tax code disadvantages single people or the unmarried. It disadvantages siblings, for example, who've lived together for a long time, even friends who've just lived together for a long time. You know, maybe there were people out there who got forced into buying with a friend because house prices were so high that in years to come will still be living with that person they were mates with at 22.
Probably. Well, let's hope by then the inheritance tax laws have changed to include them.
Yeah, they're probably likely to get more stringent, actually. We also have the own home main residence allowance, which is an extra little bit on top of it that George Osborne came up with the idea of to try and get the inheritance tax limit to £1 million rather than just raising it to £1 million, which is what the Tories had said they were going to do. But why do something simple when you could complicate the tax code? This only counts for your own home that you live in if you leave it to a direct descendant, so your children and grandchildren. Bit more disadvantaging of the single and childless in the tax code there. That limit is going up by £25,000 to £150,000. Or has gone up, I should say, by £25,000 to £150,000. It's got another £25,000 to go. It's meant to be going up to £175,000, which when added to your £325,000, will give you your £500,000, doubled up with your spouse or civil partner, will get you to £1 million. People need to be aware that they will lose that allowance once joint assets exceed £2 million. So if you are in the lucky position of having an estate with your spouse that is worth more than £2 million, you're going to start having this chipped away at as well.
All right, just keeping with the property theme, buy to let, because I remember, Simon, there was a time not too long ago when we talked about buy to let, what felt like every week, died off a little bit, us talking about it, certainly.
No, they are still there, hanging on. Hanging on for dear life. They're not hanging on for dear life. Many of them are making nice, healthy rental profits from properties that they bought when they were cheaper and are now sitting on a nice capital gain as well. However, what they are finding is that they are having to pay more tax because mortgage interest relief is being removed. And instead of being able to offset all of the mortgage interest that they pay against their rental tax bill, for which they must pay income tax on, only pay tax on the profit in the middle. They now have to add their rent to their other earnings and then pay the tax, and they get a tax credit, a maximum of basic rate. So this means that higher rate taxpayers can no longer get the 40%. And it's being edged in. So landlords can only deduct a quarter of the interest they pay on their mortgage from rental income when they declare it to the tax man. That is down from 50%. And then from the new tax year that will roll around on April the 6th, 2020, they will not be able to deduct any of it and they will only get their basic rate tax credit.
All right, so that's homes. Let's focus on drivers, shall we, Simon? Because motorists have been hit by a sneaky rise in car tax that could see annual costs go up by as much as £65. I call it sneaky because it wasn't actually mentioned during the Chancellor's autumn or spring statement, but it was confirmed as part of last year's budget document. Now, it only stated that vehicle and excise duty rates would increase in line with inflation from April the 1st, 2019. So, what's going on here, Simon?
Yes, you could call it sneaky, which we kind of did. Or you could just work
stealthy,
on...
Stealthy, I think you used the word.
Stealthy, yes. Or you could just kind of work on the basis that your car tax is definitely going to go up every year because that's what the government does. Now, for many people, it's probably going to be an extra £5 to £15 a year. Mm-hmm. If you go to thisismoney.co.uk/cars, you can find Rob Hull's very in-depth article with his handy quiz mechanism in it, where you can enter when your car was made and what band it falls into, and then you can discover how much your car tax is going to go up by, which for me I think was about £15.
Right. There's not a lot you can do about it, so
no, I mean, you have you have to tax your car. The only other alternative is to buy another car. You're probably going to lose more than £15 on that.
Yeah, I'd say.
The interesting thing about the car tax system though now is that you can just do it by direct debit. Mm-hmm. Which is what I do. Now, sneakily, they do charge you a bit more money for paying by direct debit. but it does mean you don't have to worry about your car tax running out. It just keeps rolling over and rolling over and rolling over. And it doesn't feel as expensive. And actually, it's quite a good thing to be signed up to because for most people, they manage to get hit by three bills at the same time. Car tax, service on the car insurance. Paying out for all those three things is really expensive. It's an expensive time of year.
Yeah.
So if you can spread at least the car tax around the year, insurance is harder to spread around the year because insurers rip you off even more for paying monthly. And good luck trying to convince your local mechanic that you're going to pay him throughout the year.
Exactly. All right, well, it's not just car tax on the rise this month. You may have spotted, or you will soon, that your bills have gone up. Mobile, energy, water, subscription, TV packages. But it's not just those sorts of bills. There's a whole host of other things have gone up too. Council tax, TV licence, prescription, only for those in England, though. Stamps as well. So, Simon, talking about things all coming at once, this is really all coming at once. You may not pay it all at once, but certainly things are on the rise.
Yes. Welcome to April.
Exactly.
Happy New Year.
We spoke about the winners and losers. It doesn't sound like there are many winners in this.
No, it's National Price Hike Day was on the 1st of April, as we called it. So people's energy bills have gone up by a lot. Virgin Media, Virgin Mobile, added an extra £4 to the cost of my SIM-only deal.
Yeah, you tweeted about this, didn't you?
I had some confusing conversations with them. So firstly, I phoned them up and said, you've put it up by 50%. I'm not that happy about that because you basically told me that this was a good deal. It was a special deal for me years back and it would never
special
change.
Special deal for you, 50% increase, yes.
Yeah, no, not the 50% increase. That wasn't a special deal for me. Loads of people are getting that. And you've whacked it up by 50%. I don't think that counts. And I was told by the lady on the phone that the reason why it was going up by £4 was because they were moving all of their customers who were on SIM only, who were still on 3G to 4G, which includes me. Mm-hmm. So basically, mine was unlimited minutes, unlimited text, unlimited data, and it was on 3G. To be honest, I got 4G on my work phone, and it wasn't noticeably that much quicker than the 3G phone. And I just, because it was a good deal, I just never bothered to change it. But she said, it's because I'm going to 4G. And I said, well, why didn't you put that in your letter? She said, well, we didn't. And I was like, so you're sending me a new SIM card then? She said, yes, we're sending you a new SIM card. I said, right, so when's the price going up from? The 1st of April. She said, yes. I said, so you're going to get that new SIM card to me by the 1st of April? She said, yes, we've sent you out a new SIM card. Will it arrive by the 1st of April? Yes. Can you confirm that? Yes. Does the SIM card arrive by the 1st of April?
I'm guessing no.
Of course it didn't arrive by the 1st of April. So I phoned up on the 3rd of April. Yeah, and sent me this SIM card. Lady says, we're not sending you a new SIM card because you've already got a 4G SIM card. It's just not activated for 4G, so we don't need to send you a new SIM card. I said, all right. Why did you tell me you were sending me a new SIM card? She said, well, I don't know. That was incorrect. I was like, okay. But she confirmed that it was on the way to me. Of course she didn't confirm it was on the way to me. She was just lying to me over the phone. I said, well, why am I still on 3G then? And she said, well, because your bill rolls over on the 16th of every month and you'll get automatically upgraded to 4G then. And I said, but the price hike has come in from the 1st of April. So why am I paying you from the 1st of April, but I'm not getting it until the 16th because it's an automatic upgrade? Well, I want you to change it now. I can't change it now. She started telling me that I wouldn't be being charged for it. And I said, but I am being charged for it. I'm looking at my bill online and it tells me last month I paid £8. This, I can't believe I spent so long arguing about £4. This month I'm going to be paying £12. Simon. It is kind of like they've charging me for something I wasn't getting. So anyway, she says, no, that's not happening. So I said, this is not making any sense. Ask to be put on the phone to a manager. Get put on the phone to a manager. Explain it to her. Get cut off. I mean, I've spent so long on the phone, being passed from pillar to post, lots of waiting to get through and everything. Mm. So I sit there. I think, they'll phone me back. They got my mobile number. It's my mobile phone company. They didn't phone me back. Call up again. Spend ages waiting to get through the queue. This time, asked to get put straight through to a manager. Get put straight through to a manager if you count waiting on hold for about 10 minutes as being put straight through. Go to the manager. Manager says, no, you're not moving on to 4G. I said, what? But I was just told I was. She said, no, you're not moving on to 4G. Whatever. I said, well, why have you put the price up by £4? She said, we're just putting it up by £4 for all of the people on our unlimited contracts. I said, so I'm not getting anything different. You're not upgrading my service. No, we're just putting your price up by £4. So I was just getting a 50% price increase for nothing. I said, but why was I told that it was because I was moving to 4G? That was wrong. Why was I being told I was being sent a new SIM card? That was wrong. Why did the person I spoke to before you, only today, tell me that I would be automatically upgraded to 4G on the 16th? Apparently that was wrong.
What?
Don't even ask.
Where are you at now? I expect you've got 4G. I expect you've got compensation. I expect you've got your phone bill paid for.
I just gave up eventually.
Did you not say, do you
She
know
then
who
started
I am?
Telling me about other tariffs that I could switch to. Which one of which was like I'd pay them £7 a month, be moved to 4G, but I'd now only get 3 gigabytes of data, which is much worse. She was telling me that I don't use my unlimited data. I was like, yeah, but I still have it there. And eventually I was just like, that's £5 cheaper than what they're going to be charging me. It's £12. And it's only on a 30-day rolling contract. So I said to them, move it over now on the basis that I'm just leaving. I've had enough of them.
Yeah.
Because their customer service is abysmal. None of the people you're talking to.
They lied to you.
It's an Indian call centre, okay? Some Indian call centres are good, some are terrible. Virgin's is terrible. I didn't get consistent information from a single one of those people I spoke to. And who knows what's going on? Literally, who knows what's going on? Maybe I've made the bad choice. Maybe I would have got automatically upgraded to 4G and still got a really good deal for it. I don't know. But do you know what? I just shifted it to another thing and I'm going to go to another company. And do you know the other best thing about this? Is when I actually compare the SIM-only prices of the other companies, they're more expensive. I am going to go pay another company more money to not be a Virgin Mobile customer anymore.
That says...
I've finally had enough.
A lot. That says a lot. We'll get on to... Because there's lots of price hikes.
Yeah, but anyway, price hikes.
Good
price
hikes. Good stories, because there are things that you can do in terms of mobile. So we may as well cover that off now. I have O2. Every year they put it up, my bill. In line, I've SIM only in line with inflation, and they said to me when I went in, if you just call us up and ask for it to be taken back down, we will. So, okay, thank you very much for that tip. I really appreciate you telling me that. I'm not sure I really appreciate the fact that you have to do that, but all right. So there are things you can do if you're not happy. Speak to them on the phone and move with your feet if you're not entirely satisfied. And there's more than just price, as Simon pointed out. Okay, so that is mobile phones. There's loads of other issues though, Simon.
average energy bill rising by £117 in response to the price cap. All of the big six raised their prices by 10% or more. Well done, the big six, with some of the smaller suppliers also following suit. Number of fixed deal tariffs are coming to an end. Basically, go compare your energy prices. This is money.co.uk/energy. Stick your postcode in. See if you can save some money. Shift your bills and save some money. Mobiles, I think we can comprehensively say that we've already covered that one off.
I think so.
Council tax bills going up by an average of 4.7% based on a Band D property, £78 a year, but that could be higher depending on your location and band. I have an element of sympathy with the councils because they are really, really cash-strapped. I don't have an element of sympathy with the system, which is completely crazy because all of this money is taken in centrally and then redistributed. Can challenge your council tax bill if you genuinely think that yours is wrong, that your neighbours are paying less. Be warned, your council tax bill can rise in this instance. And there was a story a number of years back where a man challenged his council tax bills because his neighbours were lower and he got his didn't go down, but all his neighbours went up.
Yeah, careful about that.
Water, £16 a year. You could get a water meter, whether it will actually save you any money, who knows. TV licence. That's going up. You've got to pay for one of those unless you stop watching the BBC. Mm-hmm. Sky TV and broadband, again, go compare your prices, see if you can get a better deal. And that's one where you can definitely call up and ask for a better deal. Stamps, they've gone up.
Send an email.
Yeah, send an email. Or you should have bought a load before they went up. Too late now, isn't it?
So there you go. Plenty more on your website. You can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. Simon.
Email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk, tweet us at thisismoney, and come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcasts to find all podcasts past.
And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving your little ones a head start with our junior ISA.